So the point of yesterday with instantons was to show that using path integral, this expression in Euclidean space became that, and this normalization factor is given by solving this equation in the limit lambda goes to zero, where minus dt squared plus v double acting on v double at x bar. So I'm writing x is equal to x bar, that's the classical solution, plus a bunch of eigenfunctions. So if I invent some functions x lambda that do this, and I demand these boundary conditions, or maybe I should say these initial conditions, then this will only have solutions for particular eigenvalues lambda n, and that's what I'll choose these functions to be. And the point I wanted to make last time is you can choose this because of this condition. They both have the same zeros at lambda equals lambda n a. They have the same poles at lambda equals lambda n b on both sides. And approach one on both sides as well, is it? Do I have to? Oh, okay. Sorry about that. All right. So both sides, let me repeat. Can you see if it's here? Okay. Both sides have the same zeros at lambda equals lambda a or lambda a sub n. They have the same poles at lambda equals lambda b n, and they both approach unity as lambda goes to infinity. And so by a complex analysis for meromorphic functions, those two things have to be equal. And I rushed through that last time, but that's the point. So Va is some potential, and Xa is its eigenfunction that obeys this. Then I come up with some other potential, Vb, that obeys this equations for functions x, b. And now the point is, this is going to vanish since I've pulled this to the other side. For the lambda n's, for the a potential, this vanishes. For the lambda n's, for the b potential, that vanishes, which means that's where the poles are. The zeros are at lambda an, the poles are at lambda bn on this side. Over on this side, well, if you look at what happens here, when lambda equals lambda n, we have this condition. So when lambda equals lambda an, this vanishes. When lambda equals lambda bn, this vanishes. So this side has the same poles and zeros as that side. As lambda goes to infinity, this obviously becomes one. This perhaps not. Well, this not so obviously becomes one, but you can take the limit of large eigenvalues and make sure they're closer together, so you can force this to be one. And then we're imagining lambda here is analytically continued to a complex variable, in which case you've got two different complex functions. They have the same poles, the same zeros, and they obey the same boundary at large lambda, so they got to be the same function. And therefore, this ratio, so the ratio of this to this is a constant, and we'll choose that constant to be the normalization. That's the logic behind that step, which I went through too fast, perhaps. Yes?
The determinant of operator has zero eigenvalue, right?
Pardon me?
The determinant of an operator.
Yeah, so you take the limit of the zero eigenvalue case, which is not the same. Lambda naught is not the same as lambda equals zero. The smallest eigenvalue is not necessarily when lambda is zero. So I'm continuing this through parameter space. And I'm just saying that, okay, lambda equals zero is not necessarily an eigenvalue solution to this equation. But because of this analytic continuation argument, the ratio of this thing to x lambda as lambda approaches zero is some constant. And I will then choose this constant to absorb that one. And therefore, it means I can replace this with e to the minus x, e to the minus action at x bar times 2 pi h bar x sub lambda at t over 2 to the minus a half as lambda goes to 0. That's the logic that's being used. So, so let me actually look at a couple of examples here. So first of all, the energy is a half m dx bar by dt squared minus v in this funny Euclidean world. And this constant of the motion can be set equal to zero. So this is like a particle moving in a minus v potential. So if we have, let's try examples. One is a single well. Let's just look at how this stuff applies to a single well, and hopefully the utility will be clear. So in a single well, this the potential v as a function of x, if I go to the Euclidean case, this thing flips upside down. And so I want to ask, what are all the classical solutions to that equation that extremize the motion? I'll choose v of x bar to be 0. I could slide this up and down as I like. So let's put it so that it when x bar when x bar vanishes, I want, or rather when x vanishes, I guess, in this language. So at the origin, I'm going to demand v is 0. And so we want these boundary conditions. We want the variation of the action evaluated at x equals x bar to vanish such that we have these boundary conditions x of plus or minus t over 2 is 0, so such that this is the case. And so the only solution of these two conditions is the particle sits still in the Euclidean world at the top of the hill, because we can't have, as soon as it's over here, it'll slide down there and keep going forever. As soon as it's over here, it'll slide down there and keep going forever. So it's got to sit right at the top of the hill. over here, we have v double prime at x bar is equal to v double prime at 0, which we'll define to be omega squared. So this is the Euclidean solution. This thing just sits right up here forever. So now we've got to look at that condition here. We have minus dt squared plus v double at x bar. Let's solve this thing. In this case, lambda naught, I think, is 0. So the solution to that is that this is the shine of omega of t plus t over 2. And this approaches as x goes to t over 2, 1 over omega, times e to the plus omega t, sorry, as t approaches t over 2. And so then, what we're interested in is finding this vacuum expectation value, but we're starting at 0, we're ending at 0. So we've got e to the minus ht over h bar on the vacuum, which is going to be, by the relation last time, e to the minus s of x bar over e to the minus s of x bar divided by h bar times n times this thing as lambda goes to, minus a half, as lambda goes to 0. Well, s of x bar vanishes, so that becomes 1. This whole thing here is equal to 2 pi h bar times, if you look over on the board, x0 of t over 2 all to the minus a half, and x0 of t over 2 is that thing. So this becomes omega over pi h bar to the 1 half times e to the minus omega t over 2. Yes? It's equal to 1. The action, I should write it down. So the action is equal to a half m dx bar by dt squared plus v of x bar, and that's 0 for that solution. Because x bar is constant, that vanishes, and I've chosen v of x bar to vanish. So e to the 0. Yes, I'm sorry about that. Thank you. So you might say, all right, what the heck good is this? Well, the what the heck good is this is we actually know how to calculate this by other means, and we can learn something. We'll put in a complete set of states, ML, a complete set of states on this side. So now I'm saying this thing, so going with this instanton way, the path integral way, we go here. But now I'm going to say, okay, let's shove a complete set of states into both sides and see what happens. Well, this is equal to the sum over m and l of 0L times L e to the minus emt over h bar times m, because these are eigenstates of h, so they'll have some characteristic energies. Well, this thing here is just equal to the sum over ml of 0L delta Lm e to the minus emt over h bar times m0. Because this is a constant, it comes out here, and there these are orthogonal, so I get a delta Lm, which means what I'm getting is the sum over m of 0 m quantity squared e to the minus emt over h bar. And in that limit, as t gets large, I find that this is equal to 0, 0, e to the minus e naught t over h bar plus smaller stuff. In other words, the largest term in this series is going to be the one with the smallest energy, because any larger air energy is more exponentially suppressed. I mean, this is exponentially suppressed, but every other energy that's bigger is even more exponentially suppressed. So now what that means is this, well, this is going to be equal to 1 because it's normalized to 1. So what I'm finding is that E naught T over H bar is equal to omega over that. These T's cancel and I recover, well, what do you know? E naught is the ground state energy of the harmonic oscillator. E is H bar over 2. And there will be terms that are corrections of 1 plus order H bar, and I can actually see what they are from this thing. And in fact, I should be a little careful. This is not actually equal to 1. This thing actually has to have a normalization that's given by this thing out front. So I can normalize my states like that, but this is just the harmonic oscillator. And so the point is, for a single well potential, no matter what its shape, I put no conditions on this thing, except I chose at 0 to be at the origin. What it cares about is the second derivative at the origin, which gives us maybe, I guess, familiar physics from other contexts, that in some sense, all potentials think they're harmonic oscillators. The only ones that won't are ones that will have vanishing second derivative at the origin. But as long as you've got a non-vanishing second derivative at the origin, this is telling you that the lowest energy state is the same as that of a harmonic oscillator. All right, what about a double well? A double well now looks like two of these things, like so, and it will go to this kind of thing, like so. And this I'll say is at minus A and plus A. I'll just choose the potential so that these minima are at the same place. And I'll choose V of X to be symmetric under reflection. And I'll choose the second derivative to be some constant that I will still call omega squared. And now what one has is a situation that's more complicated here. We'll have X bar we'll want to choose at minus T over 2 is at negative A, and we'll want to choose it at plus T over 2 in Euclidean land is plus A. So we're imagining a situation where in the Euclidean space, the particle starts here and ends there. And what's going to happen is this will be interpreted as tunneling from here to here in imaginary, using these, Euclidean space methods. So, so these are the BCs. And we need, of course, X bar to solve this equation, as we did for the single well example. And we could do the second order equations of motion, but actually, the classical energy is 0, since E is equal to a half. Absorbing a definition of the mass, dx dt squared minus v of x bar. That's a constant of the motion. It has to be true at all x. I guess I should have said that up there. So in particular, it's true at x equals plus or minus a, but that's 0 at x equals plus or minus a, yes.
So the vacuum over there, the normalization, should that be a fourth root of omega over pi?
Yes, my apologies. I I get overly enthusiastic. The square is that. You're right. My apologies. V, not V double prime. So that's what the energy is. So rather than solving the second order differential equation, I'll just note that this constant of the motion has to vanish because it vanishes at plus or minus A. So that tells me that dx bar, the classical solution, has to equal the square root of 2v of x bar, which, well, let's see. If I expand the solution in a neighborhood, let's say around here, this is the square root, approximately this is equal to 2 v of a plus a minus x bar v prime at a, which vanishes, and then I've got a half a minus x bar squared v double at a plus stuff, all to the 1/2. So this is approximately equal to, the 2 cancels the half, so this is approximately a minus x bar times omega, which tells me that x bar is equal to a minus e to the minus omega t near x equals a. So in other words, you start out at a, and then as t gets large, you're going to get in the future, well, sorry, you start off from someplace, but as t gets large, you're exponentially approaching that value. You can also show, I want to put it on here, you can also show that x bar is equal to minus a plus e to the plus omega t as t approaches large negative values. So it starts way back here, exponentially close. Something happens in the middle, but as it gets to there, it approaches a again with exponential rapidity. So the solution is something like this. This is a, this is minus a. Remember, I have these boundary conditions that have to be satisfied, which they are, as t gets very large, this is tiny, and I get that. And I'll call this point t equals t1. In other words, at this point, x bar of t1 is 0. There has to be some place where x or some time rather where x vanishes. So this is a bona fide instanton with center at t equals t1. Polyakov called it a pseudoparticle. Tuft called it an instanton. So the instant part refers to the time, and the on part refers to its particle-like nature, you know, photon, phonon, boson, etc. So the idea was that it has this soliton-like structure, but in time, not in space. So this takes x goes from minus a, I'm going to say this, x goes from negative a to plus a. An anti-instanton would take you the other way around. Instanton is from plus a to minus a, so the anti-instanton would look like that. If you switched the boundary conditions so that this were plus and this were minus and repeated the procedure, you'll get something like that. And I don't really know what happens in the middle, but I do know it's exponential here and exponential there by this, yes. In Euclidean space, yes. This whole solution is the instanton. Yeah, this entire structure, this is the instanton.
And what is the motivation for picking those particular...
Because we want to understand tunneling from here to there. If we picked a boundary condition that said it was always here, we'd be back to this case. Nothing stops that. But we've already done that case. So let's look a bit further. What about the action? The action for the instanton in the single well case is boring. It was zero. But the action for the other case is equal to the integral. So S at X bar in this case is the integral from minus T over 2 to T over 2 of dt of a half the velocity squared plus v bar. And when you work this out, it's minus a to a times the square root of 2v of x, which you can get basically by recognizing this is true on the solution. So dx bar dt squared is just so this becomes v plus v, but dt is dt dx bar time, or dt dx bar times dx. And so dt dx is 1 over two, root 2v, and that's why you get a square root. So what I've used here is dt is equal to dt by dx dx, and that's 1 over root 2v, if you want to see the arithmetic. So the functional integral is a bit tricky because delta squared s, delta x naught squared at x bar is equal to evaluated at x naught. So the second derivative of x bar has one zero eigenvalue. And that zero eigenvalue, so this is a eigenfunction with zero eigenvalue. And you can show that x naught is 1 over the square root, let's call this s naught. This is 1 over the square root of s naught times dx bar by dt squared. And let's see, if we remember that, remember delta s squared delta x naught squared is minus dt squared plus v double at x bar. And if you look at the solutions to this equation, if you put dx bar dt in here and use those relations, you'll find this. If you put this thing into here, you will find that that operator is zero. And it's the only zero eigenvalue that we have. So I guess you need to see that. So So as a consequence, where was I? So as a consequence, this normalization factor here with this zero eigenvalue has to be dealt with. We have x is equal to x bar plus the sum of the c's times the xn, which is x bar plus c0 x0 plus the sum for n not equal to 0 of cn xn. When we make that that expansion, and the functional integral is given by n times the integral of dc0 over 2 pi h-bar times the product of all the non-zero eigenvalues to the minus a half. Remember, the answer we got was the determinant, got a minus a half there. The answer we got is this determinant of all these eigenvalues, but if one of them is zero, then if we multiply it, we'll get zero for everything. So the integral over all of these non-zero guys gives the product of all the non-zero eigenvalues. But the integral over that particular one remains to be carried out. And, well, how are we going to do that? Well, because of this, we have delta x is x naught delta c naught plus xn delta cn, but we've integrated those out in getting that expression. So I'm not going to worry about what those do. This, in the other hand, is delta x, or rather is dx by dt, delta t, which is equal to dx bar by dt times delta t1. In other words, the interpretation of delta x is I'm wiggling over all possible paths, and I've integrated out over every wiggle except this zero mode. But the actual wiggle of the solution, the only thing it can change, given the boundary conditions, is where that zero is. So I can slide that upper curve this way or that way, but it's still going to be forced to exponentially approach plus and minus a. So that's what this interpretation is, and therefore we know what delta c naught is in terms of delta t. This tells me that delta C naught is equal to 1 over X naught, X naught, times dx bar by dt squared. But I had X naught. It's equal to that. So that, we have seen, is just equal to the square root of S naught, oops, times the delta T1. So that's the square root of S naught, delta T1. So what this means is that the integral of DC naught over 2 pi H bar to the 1 half is the integral from minus T over 2 to T over 2 of dt 1 over 2 pi h bar times the square root of this s naught thing, which of course is just the square root of s naught over 2 pi h bar times capital T. In other words, the integral over the zero mode is an integral over the location of where that curve cuts the axis. That's a choice that is not determined by those boundary conditions. It's going to cut it where it's going to cut it, but since I'm adding up over all possible paths, I've got to add up over every possible place that thing could intersect the axis. And so integrating over this is tantamount to integrating over that. That's the idea. And so now we've got an answer for this path integral, because we've got the whole thing now, including this. So we want to know what the amplitude is to go from minus A to A, and that is going to be equal to the square root of omega over pi h bar kt e to the minus s naught over h bar e to the minus omega t over 2, where this k quantity is given by all of this stuff. It's s naught over 2 pi h bar to the 1 half. That's from this c naught integral. And it's given by the product of all these eigenvalues, which I can write as this ratio of the determinant of d squared plus omega squared over the determinant of negative dt squared plus v double of x bar of t, using this ratio idea that I have here. So this is the one instanton contribution to this. In other words, the particle in normal world, the world where time is clocks, tunnels from one side to the other. The interpretation is it starts in the Euclidean distant past and goes from minus A at that point to the Euclidean distant future, where it is plus A. And the amplitude for doing that is given by this structure right here. And what one should actually do, what one should actually do is say, well, there are lots of these kinds of transits, not just one. There are lots of these kinds of transits, and you should really add up over all of them. So this is the one instanton contribution. Is that expression there. But it could go from minus A to A, and then back to minus A, and then over to A, and minus A, and slide back and forth who knows how many times. So if we want to go from minus A to A, we should add up over all possible transits that are an odd number of times. If we demand we start at negative and end at positive, we go either once, three times, five times, seven. We can't go an even number of times, or we'll get back where we started. So the total contribution is this. The total contribution is omega over pi h bar to the 1 half e to the minus omega over 2 times the sum from over n equals odd of k e to the minus s naught h bar, s naught h bar to the n over n factorial. So in other words, when I calculate this twice, I'm going to get the square of this quantity. Where can I show that on the board? When I calculate that twice, I'm going to get the square of that quantity, and I'm going to divide by 2 via symmetry. When I calculate it 3 times, I'll get the cube. And this works out to be, of course, 1/2 times this funny thing here. It's just a hyperbolic function, e to the minus omega t over 2. The factor omega t over 2 doesn't change because that's due to the boundary conditions. But this factor, of course, gets multiplied because I have to do it twice and three times and many times. So this is times, if you like, this is the expression for the shine of kt e to the minus s naught over h bar. If I go from plus a to plus a, or minus a to minus a, doesn't matter, let's do minus to minus, then you have to add up over this when n is even, and the answer is equal to, as probably does not surprise you, you just get the cosh of k e to the minus kt e to the minus s naught over h bar. So the point is, every instanton transit contributes this, and it contributes this product. And it contributes it because they're, if you like, identical transits. You divide by the number of identical transits, which is the factorial of the number of powers. So the point is, now I want to contribute or ask what the lowest lying energy levels are. And that's what this thing tells us. The lowest energies are given by this thing in here. Remember, I'm comparing this to e to the minus et based on, did I rub it out? I guess maybe I did. I'm comparing this to the ground, to the lowest order energies that will care whether I have an even number or an odd number of transits. And so there's an h bar here. So comparing this exponential to what's going on here and what comes from the cosh is I get a half h bar omega plus or minus h bar k e to the minus s naught over h bar. So in other words, there's an exponential in here at large t that is, I compare the negative sign for the one and I get the positive sign for the other. And so I will get that. So in other words, the energy is compared to this argument and the one of those arguments in there in the cosh. Yes?
So what's the interpretation of this energy? Is
the energy? This is interpreted as the lowest energies there are in this system. And so when you have a quantum particle inside a double well, classically it'll just sit on one side or the other. And you might think that's the lowest energy, but what this is telling you is that it's not. Rather, the very lowest energy will be the minus sign, where the particle is sharing half the time it's in the bottom of the left, half the time it's in the bottom of the right, and that's the lowest energy it can be in. And then the next lowest energy is where it shares it in the opposite state. I always get mixed up which one is symmetric and which one is not. But there, let's see, the plus is the even combination and the odd minus is the odd combination of harmonic oscillator states at the bottom. So the anti-symmetric combination gives you the very lowest energy, and that's what it is. And the symmetric combination gives you the next lowest energy, and that's what it is. Yeah, yeah, that's the idea. This is this raises you or lowers you relative to the harmonic oscillator energy you would get from the single well case. And well, I'm certainly not going to get to the next one, but I might as well just finish off what I should say here. What else did I? Sorry.
Why do you not get h bar omega as an energy level for 1/2 h bar omega? Like if it just sits.
Why don't I just get that?
Well, yeah, I
it seemed like that there's, it could either be in one or the other or some mixture.
It's not stable for it to stay there. It would rather reconfigure itself using these instantons to do it. So you're saying, why can't it stay there forever? Well, the reason quantum mechanically is it will have to have some zero point energy that will have to, so if we just looked like the single well case, we'd think, okay, well, it should just have that zero point energy sitting around one well. But the problem is you won't be able to satisfy the constant of the motion with those boundary conditions. So let me explain it differently. Naively, this problem, if we neglect the cosh, is the answer to what you said. But the problem is we can't stop the other instantons from contributing. So naively, if you're, let's say, in the left half of the well, if you just contribute the first term, you get what we got before. And you'd think, oh, it's a half h bar omega. But in fact, you've got to add up what all the other instantons do, and that's what modifies this to the plus sign. You can't stop it. They necessarily have to do it. If you believe in an instanton in one place, you can't expunge it from other places. One of the strange things about it is there's a 1 over h bar here. And so these are, if you like, non-perturbative contributions to the energy levels due to this action. This, of course, is an h bar, but this is not perturbative in h bar. And instantons have this effect of making non-perturbative contributions to the energy difference. So for tiny h bar, of course, this is e to the minus a large number, and this is highly suppressed, and so the difference isn't much. But e plus minus e minus is equal to 2 h bar k e to the minus s naught over h bar, and now you can't fully neglect it. There will necessarily be some non-perturbative difference in energies between these two cases. So I have no hope of getting to the theta vacuum today, but so I might as well do this right and finish off with the periodic potential. So the third case is a potential that has lots of wells. On and on and on it goes. And so this goes upside down when you go to the Euclidean world. Like so. And so the energy levels are infinitely degenerate here without taking tunneling into account. So what tunneling is going to do is break this degeneracy, and each eigenvalue will change into a continuous band. So now for tunneling, n instantons will take the particle from x equals L to x equals n plus L, and n bar anti instantons will take it from x equals L to x equals minus n bar plus L. So the instantons bump you over to the right, and the anti-instantons bump you over to the left. And each instanton and anti-instanton has to start where the previous one left off. So n bar minus n, in fact, this doesn't have to be L. This could be, let me change the letters to be more general. So if I started at some position K, it would go to there. So I could get bumped to position L and then back over here and over here and over here and so on and so forth. And so n minus n bar will equal, n bar minus n will equal K minus L, which is N independent. So in other words, the total number of instantons and anti-instantons equals the net change in position. In the double well case, there's only one place to go. If you're in one of the wells, you've got to go into the bottom of the other one. You don't have much choice. So the calculation is basically the same. You'll have one instanton to go from one bump to an adjacent bump. So the net effect is if I go from K to L, on this axis, what turns out to be the case is you get this factor here and this same factor here, but now we have to sum over all the instantons and the anti-instantons. To the n plus n bar multiplied by a Kronecker delta that forces that. So in other words, if I wanna go from K to L, then I'm going to get a double sum like what I had before, but with the constraint that the number minus the anti-number, or maybe I should say, I guess I should write this as L minus K since I switched signs, number minus anti-number is equal to that. And so now one can do this integral with this trick that says delta AB is equal to the integral of d theta over 2 pi from 0 to 2 pi times e to the I theta of A minus B. So if A equals B, I get 1. But if A is not equal to B, I'll get a cancellation, and I get 0. So using that trick, the answer turns out to be equal to the square root of omega over pi h bar e to the minus omega t over 2 times the integral from 0 to 2 pi of d theta over 2 pi e to the I k minus l theta times the exponential of this junk here, which is 2kt cos theta times e to the minus s naught over h bar. Let me get that out of the way a bit. S naught over h bar. So this is the continuous band. Now my energy is a function of theta. I've got a half h bar omega upon comparing this to this, putting in a complete set of states like we had before, this side, remember, is approximately equal to the square of the vacuum expectation value times e to the minus e naught t over h bar. So here's the half h bar omega returning from this term. But now I have this term here. I have a continuous set of values that get integrated over. And I need to compare that like so. Strictly speaking, I should write this as some integral of e of theta by d theta, and I get that. So there's a continuous band of states. So the tunneling lets the particle spread all over the place and turn what are a pair of discrete energy levels at the lowest value and other discrete at higher into a continuous band that cares about some angle. So what all of this has to do with gauge theories, which I was hoping to get to today, so we're basically a class behind, but maybe that's not so terrible. In gauge theories, this phenomenon will reoccur, and it's called the theta vacuum. And just a sec. What will happen is that a gauge theory will have one kind of vacuum here, and another here, and another here, and the separate, there is no local gauge transformation that can take you from this to that. And a consequence of this will be to introduce a new parameter into the standard model called the theta parameter that is associated with this theta vacuum. And the origin and value, well, the value of this parameter is at this point in history not understood. It can the standard model doesn't predict its value. Rather, these methods tell us that it must exist. But what value it exists at, we don't know. So that's what we're going to do next time. Yeah.
So in quantum mechanics, what's the interpretation of theta?
Pardon me?
In quantum mechanics, what is the interpretation of theta? Because I can think of this periodic structure as a one-dimensional lattice.
Yeah, so in some sense, it's like the energy band of this one-dimensional lattice, I guess. It's like the, what's it called, the block?
A block wave function.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is theta exactly in that case?
Theta would be, I didn't give much thought to the interpretation in the context of a lattice, but I guess I should have. Theta is the it's a parameter you integrate over that, if you like, tells you how the energy can continuously change because all the levels from all the sites blend together, I suppose. It's a bit like I need a better interpretation than that. I was thinking it's analogous to what happens in condensed matter physics, where you've got a band of energies and then a gap and then another band of energies. That'll happen here. What we're finding is the lowest state. So in a single well, the lowest state, here's, let me draw it over here. In the single well, so here's E equals zero. What we have in the single well is H bar omega. In the double well, we have one down here and one up here. And then in the other case, we get, depending on, well, what's the maximal thing this can be? This is one is its largest value. So there'll still be a rock bottom minimum that's the same, but now we have a band. So that's basically the picture here. We go from one level in the single well, two levels in the double well, and this is the infinite well here. And that infinity does that. If you have a finite number If you had a finite number of wells, you get more and more finite bands in here if you do the calculation. And so in the limit, you have infinitely many. They all sort of smush together and give you this. Excited states, well, you'll get something here, you'll get stuff here, and you'll get another band up here. I don't know if that's answering.
It's basically a generalization of
K. Yes, that's right. So the whole point of this was to build up to what happens in gauge theories. There are other methods in quantum mechanics for getting these results. But when you go to a gauge theory, these methods are basically the only game in town, or at least the best one, for actually ferreting out these effects. And what will happen in a non-abelian gauge theory is we will get basically this kind of structure, which will lead to this kind of result. And that's what we will do next time. Okay?